Good morning. Welcome to the weekly business session. This is August 31st, 2016. It's 9 a.m. And if you'll please stand, we'll say the Pledge of Allegiance. First on our agenda this morning, we have a public hearing, so I am going to open the public hearing. It is 9:01 a.m., and I need a motion to read the ordinance by title only.
Madam Chair, I move for the second reading of Ordinance 2016-004 be done by title.
And I will happily second that.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Well, do you have any wish to have any discussion?
Okay, motion carries. Okay, the title is an ordinance. Okay, this is second reading adoption of ordinance number 2016-004. An ordinance amending the text of the Josephine County Rural Land Development Code, Ordinance 94-4, to add agriculture, farming, and farm use to Article 63, the Rural Industrial Zone, RI, and Article 101.3, Community Light Industrial Park, CLI, and 101.4, Community Industrial, CI, in the Merlin North Valley Unincorporated Rural Community. Okay, first reading was held on August 17, 2016. And I would like to say for the record, too, I've had some questions from people in regards to the statement in this title, the Merlin North Valley Unincorporated Rural Community area. Some people thought that that was limiting just to that area, and it's not. We had to specifically name that area because it is a legal entity, but this does apply to the entire county. So we have with us Julie Schmelzer today. She's the Community Development Director. If you would like to please give us a summary of what this is going to entail.
Sure. For the record, as Cheryl said, Julie Schmelzer, Director of Community Development. So the Planning Commission heard this at a public hearing on June 6th of this year, and the proposal was to basically allow production of agricultural crops in the industrial areas. What that means is you could use former industrial sites, specifically mill sites, for production of herbs or other crops as people may want. The Planning Commission thought it was a good idea because we do lack agricultural land, but we are on the decline with agricultural land. We're seeing that we're losing industrial land, and this would allow us an opportunity to reuse some sites that are not being used for industrial for ag purposes. I'm not going to go through all the statistics that we did at the first reading. I don't want to repeat it for you, but of course if somebody is here that would like to hear that information, I can. But in general, you know, we only have farms in our county comprise only 3.5% of our total land acreage. So by allowing vacant industrial sites, or any industrial site for that matter, to be used for agriculture, we thought was a win for the county. If the board does approve of this, it would become effective on November 29th of this year. We do have some properties that are already waiting for the amendment to go through to see if they can indeed use those industrial sites for agricultural purposes. So we know that we feel it's a movement in the right direction because we do have people waiting, and we're already seeing the opportunity to reuse those properties that are currently sitting vacant.
Any questions, Commissioner?
I have a couple. So you said we're losing industrial land. I'm not aware of anybody downzoning industrial to transfer it into commercial or residential. I think it's sitting fallow because of industries in the past that are no longer have the inputs. I'd say the timber industry, they don't have the input from the forest that we used to have. So from my perspective, I think you may have just trying to clarify that I think that there's a lot of new agriculture that's requiring high intensity types of infrastructure that isn't really available on historic EFU. You might have irrigation systems or whatever, but for that processing to take place or the high density of the high-value agricultural commodity, it would cost a lot. People are investing that in EFU and certainly can. But where it already exists on industrial land, maybe it makes sense to just broaden the scope of the options provided those people who own those properties to integrate into that. And then I think one of the other opportunities this board saw was that you could not just have production on a piece of property, we have some rather large industrial, but you could control the entire process from production through processing, packaging theoretically, and then have a shipping wholesale type of a facility there, all in one stop shop. Well, you couldn't do that necessarily on EFU, or it would be much more challenging. So I think that was kind of our intent. I didn't want to presuppose what an industrial property owner should choose as the best use of their properties when they've been sitting sometimes fallow my entire life because a mill shut down back in the 70s or something, 80s. They haven't been able to find an alternative that's willing to come and relocate.
Yes, and I agree with you, Commissioner, here. If I did say losing industrial land, I thought I meant to correct myself with agricultural land. We're actually losing agricultural land. We lost 25% in a five-year span. But definitely, this opens the, you know, we've had difficulty with these industrial sites. You know, a lot of them aren't close to a highway. Some of them don't have the sewer and water, or they basically lack the infrastructure we need to develop them industrially. And this does open that door to have that, I don't want to say one-stop shop, but that entire process from field to factory operation going on these properties that currently we do not have that ability to do.
And I see this as a light industrial use. It isn't a heavy industrial use. Most agricultural processing could be considered that. So it's probably a really good fit for industrial lands that may have been have historic zoning that may not always feel good if you were to put a mill back on that spot because maybe non-compatible uses have popped up around them. These industrial zones were done in 76 and inherited by whatever historic kinds of things were taking place on these properties for the last 100 years. And then they're not there for 20 years, 30 years, or whatever, and somebody moves in around them, and then something else starts up, and it's like, well, wait a second, this is a conflict. But that zone predated any kind of zone, and that's the challenge. I think the premise of land use in and of itself and what we're doing this for is to mitigate challenges between landowners, and I think this is a very easy, we haven't heard any kind of objections from the standpoint that no, this is going to adversely affect the use of my property right next door to an industrial place. That's not likely to occur with this kind of a broadening of the code.
When the Plan Commission did hear it at the public hearing, there was some concern, and it was basically, if I remember correctly, all of the concerns were related to marijuana. And, you know, we had to remind people this isn't just marijuana. It's all agricultural crops are eligible to now go into an industrial zone for production. But Yes, as far as I remember our meeting, our last public hearing, I don't think anyone spoke against it. There was probably just a question on clarification, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
Yeah, I would have to agree based on some of the other industrial zones we have and some of the projects going on. I think this is by far a more compatible land use versus if it would reopen as, let's say, a batch plant or something to that effect.
Yeah. So there was one theoretical objection, I think, when the board... Why was this never included from the get-go? Why are we having to do this kind of after the fact? And I think what we had discussed is the only reason why it wouldn't have been originally included is that you wouldn't want to put a low-value kind of agricultural-focused production opportunity on high-value industrial lands where the whole point of industrial is that's what you put when you don't want it anywhere else. You know, that's the stuff in ag land. EFU, exclusive farmland, that's where ag stuff should be, but that this board or a policy of the county would presuppose what an owner of their property on industrial should or should not do as their highest and best use, that's not necessarily where I want to go. I think that should be left up to the property owner. And at what point the ag industry is not penciling fiscally, they'll make a decision. They'll change
and I think the public has to remember, too, that these are living documents that we're working with. It's our responsibility to make sure that we are periodically looking at where we need amendments to make sure that our plans, codes, and policies are keeping current with trends. And this is one where 20 years ago, who would have thought that we would see the loss in ag land that we have? So now we're sitting with the situation, and we also wouldn't have thought we would have had these vacant mills either
right.
at one point. So now we're sitting with that, the reality of we have these vacant industrial spots, we're losing agricultural land, what do we do? So it only makes sense that we periodically look at these codes and make sure that they're updated.
Thank you very much for your work on this.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to open it for any public comment. It will be public comment on this issue only. Does anyone wish to speak on this at this time? Okay, all right, I'll bring it back to the board.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'd make a motion to approve Ordinance 2016-004, an ordinance amending the text of the Josephine County Rural Land Development Code, Ordinance 94-4, to add agriculture, farming, and farm use to Article 63, the Rural Industrial RI Zone, and Article 101.3, Community Light Industrial Park, CLI, and 101.4, Community Industrial CI in the Merlin North Valley Unincorporated Rural Community.
Okay. Do I have a second to that motion?
Yeah, I'll second.
You get to read it.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
No.
Okay, and again, I just want to reiterate that just because we stated Merlin North Valley Unincorporated Rural Community, that is a separate entity that we did have to delineate in this, but it does not restrict this to just that area. It does affect the entire county. Okay, roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing. It is 9:12 a.m. Moving on, I'm going to open the public hearing. It's 9:13 a.m. I'm going to open the public hearing on the Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, from the Oregon Business Development Department for the Food and Friends Senior Resource Center. And we have Pat Foley, Community Development Specialist, with us, I believe. Would you like to come up and make any comments in regards to the project, what this CDBG means to you, and what other activities you have undertaken to make this a successful project?
Okay. Basically, this CDBG is being submitted by the Josephine County in conjunction with the Rogue Valley Council of Governments. The total cost what this project is for the purchase and renovation of a building here in Grants Pass to be used as the Food and Friends Senior Resource Center. The total project cost for the renovation is approximately $1.35 million. With the Josephine County CDBG covering 60% of the total cost, and the remaining 40% is matched through fundraising through the Rogue Valley Council of Governments. One of the things the state awards approximately $11.5 million dollars to non-metropolitan cities and counties in the year 2016. The maximum grant that a city or county can receive is $2,500,000. The Josephine County portion of this grant that we are proposing is $780,000, with the remaining, as I said, is a match. This project at this time will benefit at least 1,100 persons, of whom 51% are low to moderate income. What the center will be is the basically congregate meeting site, meal site. It will be the distribution center for the Food and Friends home-delivered meals, and other activities will be planned for the future as far as classes. Actual site is the Church of the Nazarene in, that's at 155 North 9th Street, and the city, the Rogue Valley Council of Governments has a purchase option agreement with them, and they are very happy with that purchase option because they would like to see this site remain as service to the community. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Yes. I just want to thank you for coming here today. It's all really appreciated. This has been a project that's been a long time coming, and not just, you know, since this board has been on. It's been probably 9 or 10 years, actually. So since you guys were pigeonholed into the 4-H building, or Food and Friends, rather, I should say, not just the necessarily COG, into a facility that really didn't meet the needs of the community, nor the people who are providing this service to a lot of needy people, senior citizens among them. And it's been a challenge for probably a decade. What's really great about this is it won't just satisfy the need of Food and Friends, but all of the other kind of programs that are looking for a home have an opportunity to utilize this building, I think, as well. And that's going to just provide, as our senior population in Josephine County and Grants Pass certainly is increasing over time, the demand is going to grow. And it was never supposed to stay or be met by that facility over on Ringette. And I think that everything kind of came together the way it was supposed to. It might have been a little messy in the beginning of the idea that, you know, it's two kids living in a bedroom, that they're getting into middle school or high school. It's not going to work out anymore, and the time to do that probably was maybe a couple years ago, but we worked through it, and I think this is the best possible scenario for a solution to have you guys' own facility that's going to be really great. And the need, what did you say, 1 point something million?
It's approximately 1.35 million.
Okay, yeah.
It revises as
I was going to say, there's been certain versions of how this has progressed, and the fact that CBDG is an opportunity through the county, otherwise we wouldn't have anywhere, this wouldn't even be conceivable as an option with this plan if we weren't utilizing the CBDG grant, which I think the other opportunity that Josephine County's used was for a water facility, water distribution in Kirby about a decade ago, and I know that that's been just hugely successful for people to, otherwise they were having to purchase their water, they weren't having water at all, it was really, really bad. So this is another negative situation that's been made into a positive through this opportunity, and I want to thank the partnership that we have with the COG for providing the service and doing a lot of diligence to make this a success. This is a project that is a program that used to be part of what Josephine County did, and much like the CASA program, when our funds from timber dollars have just been reduced to practically nothing, we just can't do everything we used to do. And that the COG was willing to take this on I think it's a big deal. And I just want to say thanks to Mr. Cavallaro, who's here in the audience, who's the director of RVCOG, and yourself for guiding the CDBG application process, and for your partnership in getting this done. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just what the basically comments, not so much questions, comments. The partnership involved with the county and the RVCOG, as Commissioner Harris already alluded to, these funds are not coming out of any general fund. These funds are coming through grant funding. There has been a substantial amount of private funding to meet that gap, and that is still in the process of being raised, I understand, but you're down to $100,000, $60,000 of the total original need. So this is right on the cusp of taking place, and to me it's exciting to see that happen. This is a need, whether we like it or not, that we have as citizens of the county to try to meet these tangible needs of those who do not have the capability of providing for themselves in these ways. And this is the opportunity to use that facility in different ways and different outreaches is wonderful. The location is great. It's not right on the main drag, but it's just off the street, off the main drag by two blocks. So it's very good. The neighbors are all happy with it. And it's really one of these positives for everybody, the whole spectrum of going around it. So it really is a treat to have those who have been receiving helps through the Food and Friends to be able to take a deep breath and realize this is going to continue. There was those stories it was going to cease on stuff that never, never, never was the plan as far as the county was concerned. So this is going to continue, and it's going to continue because of RV COG's work. Also, the county's a partner in this, but it's basically the RV COG is the funding financial partner of this. We're simply teaming through this the county with the CBDG grant, and it's exciting to see it actually take place, and I look forward to the day when the building has been rehabbed, it's going to be refurnished or restructured, and that's all I already agreed to. So this is a very, very positive step. I appreciate all the work that you've done, also Mr. Cavallaro has done through RV COG for the citizens of Chesapeake County.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything I can add, but thank you, Ms. Foley. Appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Action item one. It's usually a public hearing might have an action item under the administrative calendar, but I don't see one. So, Mr. Cavallaro, do you need a special approval of a motion for application on the CDBG element?
Yes, and also we have any public comment either. We missed a couple of lines.
Yep.
So. Any public comment? Anyone wish to comment on the CDBG grant? Yes, please.
Mike Cavallaro, the director of RV COG. I just want to mention that it's a super partnership between us and Joe County and the City of Grants Pass, and that they have donated the next highest amount of money to the project at $155,000 out of their own city CDBG money. I just want to acknowledge that on their part.
I was going to ask that question, but if they didn't contribute anything, I didn't want Mr. Cubic sitting in there and be like, well, we didn't get
right.
No. Yes, thanks. That's great.
Thank you. All right. I will entertain a motion to approve the CDBG grant. Community Development Block Grant.
Yeah.
No acronyms here. From the Oregon Business Development Department for the Food and Friends Senior Resource Center.
Just want to make sure I didn't see anybody, but the public hearing.
Yeah, I didn't see any response other than Mr. Cavallaro.
Then that's Mr.
Well, there was one response, Mr. Cavallaro response.
Yeah. You're up.
Yes, I would move that we receive this 2016 Community Development Block Grant from the Oregon Business Development Department for the Food and Friends Resource Senior Resource Center.
I'll second that.
Okay, any further comment? Okay, roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on the CDBG. It is 9:24. All right, moving on to our administrative actions for today. We have item 3A, which is the approval of the FAA AIP Grant 007 Award and Agreement for Upgraded Runway Lighting, Airport Electrical Service, and Redesigned Parking Ramps at the Illinois Valley Airport. Of course, the FAA being the Federal Aviation Administration and the AIP being Airport Improvement Plan.
Morning.
We use a lot of acronyms.
A lot of acronyms. Larry Graves, manager of Josephine County Airports. Yeah, the FAA loves its acronyms. So this is a grant award offer that was made 1 week ago today by the FAA to be fully vetted, signed, sealed, and delivered by the end of business today in order for the award to be accepted. So something that we've been working toward for more than 4 years, and then they provide the award offer letter to us 1 week and say, this is it, you've got to sign it. So in any case, it's a very well understood project. This is a project to do the environmental determination and the detailed engineering design for new electrical service at the airport with runway lighting improvements, a new beacon light at the airport, new precision approach path indicators for pilots who are coming into land. It's very precisely aimed series of red and white lights that tell the pilot that they're either above or below an ideal glide slope. And they are effective 24 hours a day, so you can easily see them during daylight as well as nighttime. And then runway end identifier lights, which are essentially strobes that mark the beginning of the runway surface, particularly useful at nighttime for pilots. Gives them a good aim point. And then medium intensity runway lighting, which will be pilot controlled. So on the UNICOM frequency, which is a radio frequency that all the pilots at that airport will use to talk to each other and to people on the ground, they can click their microphone 3 times and that will turn on the runway lights, which is an extremely useful and practical function. And then the last portion of this is detailed design work for a relocation and rebuild of the current parking ramps at the airport. Particularly important here as we have no taxiway whatsoever and all the taxiing must be done on the runway, which is not ideal, but we're working on that issue as well. Things take time. But the parking ramps right now serve as an outlet and somewhat of a taxiway. They're laid out in a very impractical manner, and so there's going to be a new layout, and it'll be essentially the same square footage, but it'll all be usable square footage as opposed to more than half of it, which is now too close to the runway to be useful for parking aircraft or anything of that nature. So, we had a presentation of the details of the project at our Monday night airport advisory board meeting. Lots of questions, lots of give and take between and among the board members and members of the audience. And the president of Precision Approach Engineering was there at the meeting, and he made a presentation about the details, which was very well received. So this is something I would urge the commissioners to approve, and I'll be remaining here to make sure that we get signed copies of the agreement if you are so inclined. And I'll be transmitting that information to the FAA this afternoon before closing business.
Any questions?
I have a couple. Is there a, I see the value on here is like $400,000, probably not to exceed. It depends on how the grant goes, because we've seen these grants in Illinois Valley coming for one, and then they need to be expanded sometimes because they find stuff that's challenging. What is the match component element of like your department to come up with to make these kinds of things? I want this expressed as a reality of the FAA just doesn't give us money for free. We have to come up with our component, and that puts the pressure on you to try to go find those funds, because you run a pretty tight ship. You have all these opportunities like this one to do things that are going to be vastly a huge improvement to the IV airport. We've been talking about this way before you got here for probably 20 years when that lighting system was old 20 years ago. And so, you know, I want to both commend you for making this happen, but also to express the reality that more could happen if we had the available match money to say, yes, FAA, we're very serious about this, and here's our 25%. Let's go make this happen.
Yeah, and specifically, this grant is a 10% match. So the money that we provide will, for 10 cents on the dollar, be obtaining, you know, essentially $400,000 worth of good engineering design work. So the obligation that I've taken on for the airports department, which is completely unrelated to the general fund, is approximately $40,000, which is in the budget. I've budgeted for that. And of course, I am always looking for sources of matching funds. And there are numerous opportunities to bring that in, but only as the grants are on the near horizon. So we can't go out and obtain matching fund money for something that may happen 2 or 3 years down the road. It has to be imminent. And it's an interesting balancing act, because we're not allowed to even put in an application for one of these airport improvement program grants unless we have already identified the source of matching money. So it's kind of a chicken or the egg kind of a thing. So I have to make sure that we do have the money in the budget. That tends to place a lot of constraints on operational budgets and capital budgets, because I have to tie those funds up. But there are other sources of matching money that I'm constantly pursuing. As you're aware, I'm very interested in the opportunity represented by economic development grants or lottery money, because we do have the opportunity to spend 10 cents on the dollar to get very, very high quality improvements at both airports, which are an integrated part of our transportation infrastructure here in the county.
And our emergency resilience element, there's commercial, it's economic, it's huge. And I wanted to commend you for your unwavering focus to the Illinois Valley. I think it's construed a lot of times when you're, you know, the county seats and grants pass. You know, I live here during the week. We don't care about the Illinois Valley or think about it. And it's been a priority from day one for you, from a standpoint of getting fuel out there, having the improvements endorsed by the county to do for the smoke jumper base, acquiring hangars out there so people have a great opportunity to, you know, start their businesses and flourish. There hasn't, at the new fence, there hasn't been one element where you've said, no, we're not going to do that. Even employing people out there at an increased rate in time at the IV Airport, hosting events out there, it's never left out. And that I really commend you for your focus on that element. This is just one more example of how you've never overlooked what's necessary.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Okay. Item B, approval of order number 2016-031 in the matter of replacement of Lake Selmac Spillway Bridge on Lakeshore Drive, bridge number 33C25, over McMullen Creek, approving temporary closure of roadway during replacement of bridge, and report and recommendation.
Mr. Dijon Bay.
Yes, we have someone here. You know, every time I read one of these bridge numbers, it's kind of like, that's a number that doesn't mean anything to anybody but you.
Actually, it means more to Federal Highway than even.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is a request to close Lakeshore Drive for 4 months next summer, starting in August. Originally, we had hoped not to close it at all. Through the design process, we found out we're not here. During the design process, we found out we're about $800,000 over budget. So we can save approximately $500,000 by closing the bridge for the road. Again, it wasn't our first choice, but economically, there's really no other solution. We went back to ODOT. They said they would not fund $800,000 more. They entertained $300,000. So anyway, that's how
they basically meet us in the middle.
Pretty much, yeah. So that's why we're here. The new bridge will be seismically stable, so it would handle the, hopefully it would handle the Cascadia event. We had a meeting in May with people out there on site. Their biggest concern was emergency access and the time of the year. We did get the water resources folks to go from July to August, so we did save the month of July for the parks and the folks out there.
That's great, and I think we should just not fail to take an opportunity to talk about how the tourism season for Lake Selmac really peaks prior to the high heat, and how the lake kind of comes under a blue-green algae kind of a thing pretty regularly, and that you really see the number of people utilizing Lake Selmac from a recreation standpoint, camping or what have you, to decline during those hottest months when you really can't access the full benefit of the lake. So if you move it to the beginning of the season when people are most active around there, as far as keeping it open, moving the time that we're going to close it to the later part of the season, we're serving the best interest, I think, of the most people that we can. So Chief Hoke's in the audience, and he'll talk about the fire situations that happen to be, you know, doubling of a fire every 30 seconds and having to drive around, that's an element.
It is an element.
We have to weigh cost benefit element.
It is. In 2012, ODOT actually load rated the bridge, and I worked with, I can't remember the gentleman with the Illinois Valley Fire. I know it wasn't the chief and it wasn't Cameron, but their fire truck was overweight. And so we worked with ODOT and we came up with a solution for them to center their vehicles and drive less than 10 miles an hour over that bridge in order for them to still use that bridge with the capacity of it. This will also complete most of the work on the loop for Lakeshore Drive and Deer Creek. We, about 15 years ago, redecked the bridge at Deer Creek at Crooks. And we've replaced the bridge, as most or all of you should know, out there on the end of Lakeshore Drive. So this would be the other major bridge on Lakeshore Drive to complete that loop, kind of similar to what we did on Holland Loop, where we replaced the two major bridges out there. So that's pretty much all I had.
We didn't talk about the reason we're having to do this is because the structure for the spillway kind of underneath the bridge is not, it's not structurally sound. It looks like it's kind of, the walls are caving in on the spillway.
The walls are caving in.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Some of the beams were undersized over the years.
So anyway, that's...
The bridge is about 70 years old, so it's time for it to get replaced as well.
Okay.
Here for questions. So.
The difficulty, obviously, is those who live there are going to have to make the longer trip around up Deer Creek or some other way to not be able to use Lakeshore for a period of time. That's going to be the biggest issue as far as people living right there.
Yes, that is the biggest issue. And again, originally we had intended to not or to build a temporary bridge.
But the community has, you had meetings with all of those folks that live there along that area that would be impacted, I'm assuming.
We sent out a notice to a whole bunch of people, and then we sent another one out. That was their major concern. I mean, there were a few people that said the bridge didn't need to be replaced, and a few other comments, but the majority of the folks wanted it shifted to August, and then their concern was fire and emergency access. If we don't do anything and that bridge keeps degrading, it'll get to the point where nobody can go over it. So.
Yeah, and I think that's sometimes the consideration that I think we have to have, that maybe people in the private sector sometimes don't. If it was a roof, we wait until it starts to leak or something like that. We can't afford to do that with infrastructure that provides for fire access, emergency access, commerce, affects a bunch of people. You don't wait till it gets to the absolute end of its useful life. We really just can't afford to do that when it's starting to show signs of where it would cost us more money, or it wouldn't be cost effective to put money into replacing infrastructure that eventually you're going to have to replace anyway, and it isn't compliant with the seismic elements. It's integral to the spillway of Lake Selmac. It's probably one of our most complex bridges in all of Josephine County, having to do with, you know, a dam, the only real big dam that we have in Josephine County, and you can't really separate the two.
Right.
If we fix the overflow, and we didn't fix the spillway, and the spillway fails, your overflow means nothing, and vice versa. So we've really got to have those. Those are in the queue to be done fairly simultaneously, and we really just can't wait until a total collapse or failure of that infrastructure to say, oh, that's a priority now. Because that's not how funding works. That's not how projects of this magnitude. As you can see, one of the reasons we're doing this well in excess probably of a year of actual doing the construction is because funding streams have to be lined up. And you can't do funding streams until you determine how you're going to rebuild the bridge, whether or not you're doing a temporary or a full replacement. And so that's one of the reasons we're doing it a year in advance to say, yes, ODOT, we've made the decision definitively to close that road for no more than 4 months to do this bridge replacement. you know it's going to cost you X in order to do this. So that's one of the considerations that has to be done so far.
And the other consideration is everyone out there will have a year to plan. Fire department would have a year to be able to plan.
Requests and comments from citizens. Everyone will have 3 minutes. Please state your name and your address. You do not need to give your street number when you give your address. Anyone wish to speak at this time? Yes. Chief Hoke.
We have another fire burning in Cape Junction. Dennis
another
Hoke.
Another one?
Yeah, out in Lakeshore Drive. Dennis Hoke, Fire Chief, Omaha Valley Fire District. I'm a resident of Cape Junction. I agree, the bridge needs to be replaced. I'm always concerned about our bridge infrastructure, particularly in light of the potential for seismic issues here in the county and a Cascadia event that could take out our bridges and ultimately our access. However, as Commissioner Harris said, a fire does double in size every 30 seconds. So if you take yesterday's fire, if we had to delay our response time by 10 minutes to get there, we'd have lost a number of houses in Ballpark. So that's really where we're at. Then you take the medical, which is 70% of our call volume. We're significantly delayed medical response for both fire and AMR another 10 minutes. So somehow we need to let the people live on McMullen Creek, Thompson Creek, Lakeshore Drive. That emergency service is going to be delayed by 10 minutes. So that's, I understand it's a $500,000 decision that we're making, but these are people's homes and these are people's lives that, that we're impacting. Maybe we need to stop and rethink how, if there's any alternate way that we can at least keep access available for emergencies only, for emergency vehicles. That would be my concern.
Yeah.
It really is a huge, huge impact for us and our ability to provide that level of service to the community.
I think because you're going to be leaving, I'd love to answer a couple of those concerns that you have. I think it's important that we say a 10-minute addition is the maximum number for anybody. That would be on the other side of the bridge. So that's not what it would be for everybody, because some people would be getting served by Deer Creek in general. There's a point at which it makes sense to go on Deer Creek as opposed to going on Lakeshore anyway.
Exactly.
It's an $800,000 decision, because if we choose to go with replacing, having a temporary bridge, ODOT's not funding that five. We're funding all of that substitute, in my opinion. That's my understanding. It is a consideration, and what I was thinking is if there, this is a 4-month duration of time, it's not, you know, that's a maximum. If they can get it done sooner, there's incentive for that to happen. They can go on to the next job and that sort of thing. What I'm looking for is, what kind of accommodations is it possible to do for 4 months, knowing that that is a fire-prone area? I don't think you can have, emergency access over a bridge that doesn't exist for a portion of time. That may not be an option. If we had something of a bridge that would accommodate your truck, that so far actually isn't accommodated by the current bridge, really, we would open it up to people. I wish we had another access on the other side of the lake, but there's basically just a running path. I used to run it cross country. The alternative is maybe to station some sort of an auxiliary. I don't want to presuppose on a solution for something that's your job to kind of come up with, of saying maybe we should have a fire engine out there or something to that effect that's closer, that mitigates the time delay. I don't know how that could be arranged, but it's only for a 4-month duration of time. I'd love to sit down and work with Public Works and yourself and try to figure out what kind of an accommodation we could say that maybe we lessen that time by a couple of minutes, as you said. And that's a statistic that I will never forget, about the fact that fire doubles every 30 seconds. And we need to account for that as best as possible. I don't know what we could do, but I think we're kind of between a rock and a hard spot where we really, really don't have a whole lot of options there.
So the other thing I would ask is that, I mean, if we have to close this, is that somehow that we get a some type of notice out.
Absolutely.
To those people that are affected. And you're right, it only goes, you know, part of the way down Lakeshore.
Right.
We're talking about an isolated section of Lakeshore Drive,
right,
really about halfway to Dryden. But that also includes all of McMullen Creek, Thompson Creek, and those houses that, you know, the state goes up the hill.
Right.
Because that is the way that we would normally transition, is down Lakeshore.
Absolutely.
To get to those properties. And, of course, we get the
the county park there at the out that side.
Well, that affects where we stage for forest fires in general. I mean, we usually use that 9 acres at the Boy Scout camp. That's not going to really be an option that summer, and that's an easier alternative. We can find some field, school. That's not the biggest concern. It's people who are affected in a forest fire situation, a home fire. You're not able to get to as fast.
So Volk, are those people that you're talking about, are they in your fire district?
100%, yes.
So then it would be easy enough for notices to go out because they're a membership in the district. They're identifiable to be able to get those out.
But we're not a membership-type fire department like Rural Metro or County
right.
Fire and Security.
We would do
that was a mistaken comment by me. I know you're a district, but being that it's a district, those properties are identifiable so that notices could be easily sent out.
Yes.
Because our planning department sends them by address.
Yeah, and also all of those residents tangential to this situation, they've already been notified twice on what this process is. So it's not a shot out of the dark. I realize that sometimes we can't until it happens, and then we're like,
Nobody told me. We've heard that.
Well, the notices went out didn't specifically address the impact of emergency services.
Oh, no, that's true. They were just talking about the closure.
Like they're closing the bridge.
Yeah.
I'm not sure people make that connection, you know.
Yeah.
The average person calls 911 once in their lifetime. So, you know, they're not impacted. They don't see a problem.
Yeah. I think when we send this notice of the decision of the board today, if it's approved, it would be great to include in that conversation that we had about emergency services is aware of this issue. They're not going to run to the end of Lakeshore Drive and experience a closed bridge. They've made accommodations to be expressly aware of this. Whatever it is that we can kind of come up with, I think that's important to put in whatever kind of notice that this conversation has been had between the county and not just your office, but others.
Yeah, and I'll be meeting with Dave Matthews with AMR because it also is a significant impact to his organization. Try to at least come up with a solution on the medical side, but it will have that may mean that the ambulance coming for that area is going to be coming from Grants Pass versus Cape Junction.
Great,
but I will be with him too. Okay. But I just want to make the board aware of the time delay that's going to cause for emergency services.
Thank you.
We're going to another fire. Careful.
Yep.
Okay. Anyone else wish to come in? These topics today. Okay, I'll bring it back to the board.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I'd make a motion to approve item 3A, which is the approval of FAA AIP grant 007 award and agreement for upgraded runway lighting, airport electrical services, and redesigned parking ramps at the Illinois Valley Airport.
And I'll second that.
I have a motion and a second. Any further comment?
I want to thank Mr. Graves.
I think when we look at it, it's something like $6 million in grants that he's been able to bring in just in the last couple of years. So
it's huge.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. Because it's grants to the airport, that sounds pretty simplistic. But that means jobs, because you hire the people to do the work. So
nothing with the FAA is simple, and these are probably the most complex grants we ever are awarded. So
yes, they are.
And the volunteers.
That's right. All right. Any further discussion? Being none, roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries.
Madam Chair, I'd make a motion for approval of item 3B, which is the order number 2016-031 in the matter of replacement of Lake Selmec Spillway Bridge on Lakeshore Drive, bridge number 33C25 over McMullen Creek, approval of temporary closure of road during replacement of bridge, and report and recommendation.
The only addition, roadway.
Did I?
And I will second that.
Any further discussion?
I just wanted to highlight so Selmec Lake's name was a combination of Selma and McMullen Creek. I grew up there my whole life, and I never really knew how Lake Selmec got their name. Mm-hmm. And so the more people that understand that the McMullen family lived in that area, was a big pioneers of the area. Anyway, it's just a little bit of trivia. I think Mr. Brandis' office and Chuck DeJonge to try to work out the most best worst case scenario of trying to figure this out, because this is I think an opportunity where we take our bridges for granted. This is one example of a Cascadia event, a it didn't happen, but it's a version of it. And if we had to replace this bridge and we didn't have it in the queue for a plan or the money or the funding, how long do you think that would take? If this is taking probably close to 2 years to get underway. It just points out how vital our infrastructure is to emergency services, day-to-day life. We have about 100 bridges in Josephine County that we maintain. So if you can just think about the potential liability of a Cascadia event for your everyday commerce, travel, recreating, it's huge. It's massive, and we all take it, myself included, for granted. So thank you for the work that you do to maintain that infrastructure every day, Rob. Mr. Brandis.
All right. Roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries. Moving on to the consent calendar, item 5A, resolution number 2016-056, in a matter of reappointment to the Urban Area Planning Commission. This is reappointment.
No, that's to use the chair.
The other. McIntyre and yeah. Dan McVeigh, two folks being reappointed.
Right.
All right. And item 5B, resolution number 2016-057, in the matter of reappointment to the Josephine County Parks Board. And this is Larry Ford. And we were joking about this last week. Mr. Ford, very active. He's here today. Amazing.
Huh.
He's never missed a day. That's another reappointment. Okay. And so I will entertain a motion on the approval of the consent calendar.
Madam Chair, I would so move for the approval of the consent calendar items 5A, 5A, and B.
I'll second that.
Any further discussion?
No, thank you, Mr. Ford, and those other two for their service. The Urban Planning Commission, it sounds like it doesn't really have an effect on the county. It really does. I mean, it's all in the county, and that's really one of the considerations for us having two members appointed by the board to the Urban Area Planning Commission. And just having a voice on that is an important consideration.
All right.
While we're talking about that, kudos ought to be given also to the current Fitzgerald for the very sometimes loud but proactive, thoughtful way that he leads that committee.
All right, roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Any other business before the board today?
No.
Any other matters and commissioners?
Madam Chair, I have a couple things. Today, I'm attending a meeting on the transportation and preservation modernization elements. It's a visioning element that the state is putting together. Speaker of the House Tina Kotek and Peter Courtney, Senate President, have chartered this task to go around the state and kind of figure out where are our transportation needs going into the future. I talked a little bit about this on the radio yesterday on KJO. It's kind of a boring subject. I apologize for the I'm actually pretty interested in it, which is probably a good thing for Josephine County. I'm pretty passionate about transportation as it relates to everything and anything we do. And there's some fundamentals that I think that this visioning panel really need to get under control. Its inputs to the infrastructure that we have, maintaining it, and how do we get the ever-increasing cost under control. My parents' generation built billions, if not trillions, of dollars of infrastructure in this country, and my grandparents. My generation can't afford to maintain that infrastructure, and that's a shortcoming on the system. Somehow, if anybody looks at these FAA projects, they're exorbitantly expensive from a standpoint that you or I getting together and hiring Bobby Copeland to go out there and pave an apron on a runway shouldn't cost $4 million. But if it's run through the matrix of the FAA requirements, some of those good, some of those maybe not always necessary. We just got to deal with the sheer reality that we can't even maintain the infrastructure we have. And that's a challenge that we have got to address by more than just trying to increase the gas tax and try to find more money. That you'll never be able to, at the rate of the increase in the cost of these public works projects or other things, you'll never be able to increase the revenue generated to maintain the infrastructure that's costing you 150% more than it did a decade ago. And the inputs really haven't increased that much. Wages haven't necessarily gone up. The price of fuel at $50 a barrel seems to be holding steady. Aggregate is getting more and more challenging to access. It's one thing after the other. The environmental concerns that people have, you know, valid, but need to come under some constraint of cost. And that's the message that I want to take to this visioning panel. And the legislation and the transportation package that the legislature is coming up with and putting forth in the next session, I can't be personally supportive if there isn't an element that's addressing cost and making these projects more efficient and cost-effective to John Q. taxpayer. That's a consideration that we're, as an example of Josephine County, what we're doing with the money that we have a need to maintain 582 miles of roads. We need to be chip sealing 50 miles of roads every year. We're doing 25 miles every 2 years. We're doing one quarter of the maintenance, that the low-cost maintenance types of requirement every year. Somebody's going to have to pay for that lack of maintenance that's going to come up in a decade or two because we didn't invest the money in maintaining $1 billion infrastructure now. And it's going to be people of my generation and younger who are going to have to shell out more money, twice as much, three times as much, because we didn't maintain it like we probably should have. And when you have to grind out a road and replace that first couple of inches of asphalt, that's extremely expensive compared to just doing the patchwork and chip seal overlay that would keep that roadbed and everything intact. That was one thing I wanted to talk about. So take advantage of the opportunity in Medford tonight at the Jackson County Main branch of their library from 5 to 7 p.m. There's going to be a public hearing. I know that Carl Wilson is planning on attending as well as others. So you'll be given an opportunity, as I understand, to express your point of view. You don't have to attend to do that. You can send in your comments to the Oregon Transportation Commission. Addressed to Tammy Bainey. She's a Deschutes County Commissioner and Chairman of the OTC, a good friend of mine, and she'll be more than happy to share your comments with the rest of the hearing. It's on the transportation visioning package that they're looking to put together for the next session. So that'll include probably a proposal to raise the gas tax, raise revenue in some sort to help pay for these transportation projects that are going to be going on in the next decade. So matters to you each and every day, it'd be important to, if you have a position on any issue, to express that. The other thing I wanted to do, when I pulled this up on Monday or Tuesday, there wasn't the smoke issue and the fires that we're having in the Illinois Valley. I mean, we just had a fire where it impacted three homeowners and a number of residents over there. So it's really timely. This time of year, you can take a shot in the dark and you're going to hit a forest fire almost, some sort of a fire. I just wanted to express a couple of the things that are in here. Wildfires often create air pollution as bad or worse than air pollution levels in Beijing, China. These levels are unhealthy for anyone to breathe, not just children or sensitive populations, causing severe health problems and potentially death. So that's a cost that we all incur or an inconvenience for those who live there. Wildfires burning within 50 to 100 miles of a city routinely cause air quality to be 5 to 15 times worse than normal, and often 2 to 3 times worse than the worst non-fire day. Those are sometimes considerations that we don't take. I know we didn't have a choice when the Douglas complex was going on 2 years ago, sitting in the courthouse, you couldn't see across the street. The other one that I'll talk about is the firefighting staff has increased from 5,700 in 1998 to more than 12,000 in 2015. I'm not exactly sure what this is referencing, whether or not it's the Oregon Department of Forestry, which I think it is, or some other branch of the federal agency. That ODF is a state agency. Meanwhile, the non-firefighting forest workers have been reduced by 39% in that time frame, from 18,000 employees in 1998 to fewer than 11,000 today. What I see we're doing is we're exchanging forest management for forest fire fire suppression. And really suppressing forest fire, even if it's at the wrong time of year, exacerbates your problem long term. There's no ability for a forest to become fire resilient. Adding fuel load makes your problem exponentially more challenging when a fire does inevitably erupt in an area. You can't suppress fire forever everywhere. And so I think that's why it's important that this board is obviously a champion of forest management. We're part of the lawsuit by the Association of ONC Counties that the RMP, the resource management plan that the BLM put forth on 346,000 acres in Josephine County, falls incredibly short of addressing the need for some sort of forest management for fire resiliency. And although it was the first RMP to actually address fire management, it didn't do enough. And these kinds of situations where Dennis Hoke is having Chief Hoke to run out of here, our seasons are getting drier, they're lasting longer, and there's more and more residential interaction with highly wooded areas. It's just going to get worse. So it's incumbent upon all of us to do two things. We need to do fuels reductions around our house, and we need to be a voice to our state legislature, our federal delegation, that this cannot continue. You're spending money on suppression where you need to be spending resources on forest management and addressing this as a long-term problem. It won't be solved next year. It won't be solved in a decade if we don't address from a management style how we're working with our forests. So.
Thank you. I just have a couple of things. One on the localizing it. Tequilma. Tequilma is down at the end of the road, past Cave Junction, and it's a unique community into itself. But they have a Tequilma community building expansion that is a community gathering center. And if you want information on funding of they're trying to enlarge the whole campus there. The Dome School meets there, as well as having a wider grouping of folks. And the project that they have set aside is about $325,000 project. So if you'd like to find out more about this, they have a website, www.thedomeschool, and that .org. And I'm sorry, not the, just www.domeschool.org. And you can find out about the projects that they've got going. And it's a community pride situation with the Tequilma folks. Also, Julie Smeltzer, the community, I can't remember the fancy name of it, the community development director. She has done a great job of putting together a flyer to remind people of this. We've mentioned it before. It has to do with marijuana, neighbors, and the environment. Because there's a lot of questions. There will be more and more questions in the days ahead, too. But it's available on the website, the county's website, and go to planning, and they have this question and answer available. Also, if you would like to know better in depth, Hyla Lipson is a community asset, and she is a character and a half, but she has put together this Josephine County Nonprofit Network newsletter, and it's an email newsletter. It comes out just once a month. But there is more information contained in this newsletter that you would be astounded to how much actually is going on in Josephine County. But it is all there. If you would like some information on that, you can simply contact Hyla Lipson at Hyla, H-Y-L-A, at newsletter editor, and then .ccsend.com. If you want the address, be happy to answer it if you can give me a call or send me an email. But it really is a tremendous community resource, and thanks to Hyla and all of the people that contribute to make the Josephine County Nonprofit Network newsletter a reality.
All right, this is a big weekend coming up as Labor Day weekend. I ask everyone to be careful. Also, our airport days, Saturday, September 3rd, starts with the Experimental Aircraft Association Pancake Breakfast at the airport in Merlin. Good pancakes, good juice, bacon, the whole thing. It's great. Show up and have breakfast and stay for the car show, stay for the air show. The air show will have all kinds of wonderful flying aircraft going over, and if you stay there and have lunch, there will be all kinds of food vendors there. and fun things to do. It's a great family day. And then also, this weekend is the celebration out in Cave Junction. Hopefully the fires will be out, so people can go out there and enjoy the festivities on Labor Day in Cave Junction. So
it's Saturday, too. Saturday they have the big Labor Day parade.
Now they have a three-day event, but Saturday is their parade.
Saturday goes on.
Okay. Anything else? All right. It is 10:05 a.m., and we are adjourned.